Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Sandra Barrett, and on behalf of University College of Syracuse University, it's my pleasure to welcome you here this morning on this gorgeous, frighteningly gorgeous Thursday morning. So if any of you heard Naomi Klein at Hendricks Chapel the other day talking about her book, This Changes Everything, Capitalism and Climate Change, you might look at this gorgeous weather we're having with a little bit of fear, but in the meantime, we should just embrace it and enjoy it, I guess. As I mentioned last week, we have a month, 3 weeks of academics. We have this month 3 PhDs, 2 college presidents, 2 economists, but we will survive. We're wide awake. We have lots of coffee to keep us going. But we're not talking about economics this morning. We're going to be talking about one of our neighbors, SUNY Morrisville. And to introduce today's guest speaker, Christy Anderson. We know Christy as professor of political science at Maxwell, a panelist on the Ivory Tower Half Hour, one of our annual guests here at the Roundtable, one of our favorites, a town councilor in Cazenovia, and also chair of the college council at Morrisville State College. So thanks, Christy, for joining us this morning and introducing Dr. Rogers.
Thanks, Sandra. I became chair of the college council at Morrisville about 2.5 years ago, and the college council is sort of an analog to a board of trustees, much less powerful and more advisory, but every SUNY campus has a college council. So in that position, I learned very quickly lots about what SUNY Morrisville does, and this is a very different educational institution than I've been had experience with, which are big research universities and small liberal arts colleges. This is a very different place. It's very much focused on experiential, hands-on learning. Students who have interest in agriculture work in the dairy barn or work in the equine rehabilitation center. You see the horticulture students nurturing, planting, then later marketing and selling Christmas poinsettias and Easter lilies. The auto technology students work in a state-of-the-art auto repair place and repair actual people's cars. And many academic programs of the academic programs require intensive internships. And this produces results. Last year, for example, I think in 2014, the U.S. News ranked Morrisville second nationally among regional universities for outperforming anticipated graduation rates. That means that the students there are graduating at much higher rates than would be predicted by their test scores and their socioeconomic backgrounds. I began to think that Morrisville's greatest challenge was simply to tell its story to the world, to get this story of what it does out there. About a year ago, the college had a legislative breakfast, which was designed to kind of educate its local and county and state elected officials. Dave Rogers, who was then the provost, was the master of ceremonies, and he gave an overview and also kind of orchestrated these nice short presentations by deans and staff members and so forth. He did a terrific, terrific job of talking about the historic mission of the college and the contemporary programs and the students, and I thought, okay, there is somebody who can tell the story and is passionate about it and is passionate about getting other people on board. After Christmas, so in the spring of this year, we started a presidential search at the college. And I would note that the Morrisville had not had a full-time permanent president since Ray Cross had left in 2011. So it had been 4 years without a real president. And that it had been a very traumatic time, I think, for the institution. So it was important that we do this right. And we had a national search. We had a lot of good applicants from across the country. We did the proverbial airport interviews. We had on-campus interviews. And per the SUNY rules, we sent our top 3 candidates to the chancellor, who selected, I thought, the best one of them, Dave Rogers, to be the new president. I think she made a good choice. Dave has is an economist with a deep understanding of the economics of higher education and also an extremely good understanding of the higher education terrain in central New York. He got his PhD at Cornell. He has taught at Ithaca College, at Lemoyne. He was director of institutional research and planning at Onondaga Community College. Dave has gotten off to a great start this fall, and I'm very happy to be working with him and to introduce him this morning.
Thanks, Christy. She pretty much covered everything I was going to say, so are there any questions? Thanks, Christy. It was easier to have her introduce you when she was brand new to the campus, but now she's learned so much about it. She's more articulate than the rest of us. So thanks to Christy not only for the introduction, but also chairing the search committee and making what we think is an outstanding choice for the president. So I do have handouts, and I can just imagine what you think, seeing the horse on the front. In the name of a strategic plan, why would a president want to bore an audience like this with a strategic plan? Well, it turns out we're pretty proud of that. For the last couple of years plus, we as a campus have been working at a wholesale rebirth, a new beginning. And so we have a brand new vision statement, a new mission statement. We have a new set of goals and strategies. So it's my job to tell the story, as Christy was saying, because we have a lot to tell. And I want people to understand that even though there's an incredible amount of stuff that goes on at Morrisville that is often different than other academic institutions, we nevertheless do have a plan. It's very well structured, it's organized, and it has to be in order for us to identify how our priorities align with others. And so in just a few slides, I'm going to try to give you a sense of some of the scope of things we do at Morrisville and hopefully give you some understanding of the differences in not only what we teach, but how we go about teaching it. So a little more about my background. Yeah, you can see that I'm from this area. So like Morrisville in some respects, it's been all around over 100 years, is starting again, so am I. But I've been a member of a variety of boards throughout the region, and now I no longer serve on the Focus, Greater Syracuse, although I still have my B positive button somewhere. I'm the vice president of the Madison County IDA, the Ag Advisory Board for Cornell Cooperative Extension, and the Ag Work Group for the CNY Rising, the Upstate Revitalization Initiative that was just recently submitted. And I got to work with some very great people at identifying some longer term strategies in that realm. Just a quick overview for those of you who may not know Morrisville, we are definitely a SUNY school. We were founded in 1908. Classes began October 26, 1910. It took 2 years, frankly, for a county building to be transferred the title over to the state. So some things never changed, but October 26th was the end of the harvest season. And we had both men and women, very progressive institution, men and women enrolled from the college's beginning, in part because one of our founding trustees was Liberty Hyde Bailey. And Liberty Hyde Bailey was then the dean of the Ag School at Cornell and was looking for a college that in many ways would be different but complement the agricultural college at Cornell. And so it's fair to say that without this prolific agricultural writer, Morrisville might not have been founded. So he left his imprint of very much applied learning and almost philosophical. In 1910, he wrote a book called The Holy Earth that was fairly evangelical about the importance of aligning society with elements of the earth. And so it's an interesting read. I intend to incorporate some of his insights into my own inauguration speech later this month. We offer baccalaureate and associate's degrees now. That's a recent phenomena, last 12 to 15 years. We have a branch campus in Norwich, and we have an affiliation with the EOC Center in Syracuse. So we're everywhere. We are gender balanced, almost 50-50 in terms of male-female. 30% of our students come from the contiguous counties that I would call central New York, this general region. 65% or so come from other counties, probably 25-30% from the metropolitan New York and Long Island area. 5% or so come from out of state or internationally. So let me start by the back cover, because this turns out was the first commercial ever by Frank Hellyer trying to recruit students to the then new Morrisville. And you can see that it's essentially an ad identifying the purposes and the philosophies behind the school's foundation. And we decided in our efforts to upgrade Morrisville's mission and vision, we went right back to the past. And we found this document, and we basically have updated the three major purposes for the college. What you can see, there's a compelling message from the new president, which you can probably skip. There's a new vision statement, which basically says Morrisville aspires to be an educational leader in the realm of applied learning. And we want to be recognized as a national leader in that realm, and I'll share with you some information that suggests we're on track to achieve that. The mission statement is a lot shorter than it used to be. It used to be several paragraphs long. And you can see that it essentially reflects the three main themes that organize my talk today, which has to do with applied learning, learning through experience, building communities, and a sustainable future. Those are our three main mission themes, and they provide the organization for all else that happens on the campus. In particular, I would ask you to take a quick look at the inspire learning through experience, which is really the most important of the themes because it deals with not just, again, what we teach, but how. There's a quote from Liberty Hyde Bailey that says, "You are not to engage in farming but education. You will have a farm and livestock, agricultural implements and the like, but they will be means toward the education of your students." So with that comment and that quote, which became part of the philosophical underpinnings of the college, our DNA and our history was set. The college developed since then a wide array of different academic programs, but essentially all of them have this mindset, this genetic code, which requires students to learn through experiences both on campus and now in our bachelor's programs off campus. And so creating students that are ready for the world of work technologically and understanding enough of the world around them to fit comfortably and become leaders in a variety of workplace and community settings, that's our mission. We take students who may not have all been valedictorians, though we have a few. We certainly take in students who weren't all Rockefellers. We have none of those. And in fact, we have the students within SUNY that are the highest full TAP recipients of any SUNY campus. But we transform them into people who live the American dream. And they often are first generation students. And they essentially come to Morrisville and they get excited about learning through the methods that we adopt on campus. Let me describe a little more about that. So I'll go through each of those three themes, hopefully quickly, so that we can have time for questions. But we really do inspire learning through experience. And there's some pictures, a young woman who's engaged in auto repair. There's some students that are installing panels, solar panels on a roof, and there's a few students that are actually at our equine rehabilitation center, where our equine program, I think you hopefully have heard of, where we not only break and train horses, we race them, standardbred and thoroughbred. We have the only credit-based thoroughbred racing program in the country, and we rehabilitate horses when they get to the point where they need that. And it turns out, I didn't know this, but if you rehabilitate a racehorse slightly before a sale, they command a 10% premium because they look better. So who would have guessed? I'm learning more about the equine industry just like Christy. And so, but this is what we do. We have 15 or more on-campus enterprises that are run by faculty and students. Sometimes they're run by our auxiliary, but they offer in a wide array of areas pre-career hands-on learning where students not only have to design and build, or they have to plant and grow, they have to arrange, they have to use some creative talents to actually run an enterprise on campus that is correlated, complemented with their academic learning exercises. So it's in classroom and out of the classroom, but these are just some of the specific programs that have those facilities. And let me just mention, I know the slide's a little bit off, but Nelson Farms is itself an important entity helped organized by our auxiliary corporation, but run by faculty. The students participate in that agricultural incubator. We reach out to the community. There are more than 100 different vendors who produce more than 300 products. And in that Nelson Farms incubator, we actually do have testing of recipes, and there's pack processing and packaging and even delivery of products through the web. Our own students have products like their famous, infamous roadkill sauce, and it's available on sites throughout the Thruway, and you can even buy it in LaGuardia if you happen to be there. through the Pride of New York booths that are available. It's pretty good sauce. I mean, it's, but truthfully, if you want to become a millionaire, the market's pretty saturated. So I'd look elsewhere. So the revenue, not unimportant. The students raise money through the sales of a variety of products. Our dairy alone raised $1.7 million, and you can see that about $2.7 million last year would have been higher. You probably, you may not be aware, milk prices were probably $23 a hundredweight a year ago. Now has fallen precipitously to around $1,400. So the milk prices that we command through Dairy Lee are significantly lower. But as an educational institution, as Dr. Bailey claimed, it isn't all about the money, it's about the educational experience. The dairy students, in fact, have a rather pithy slogan. They say they're so into hands-on learning that they're actually shoulder-deep in hands-on learning. So you might think this is a small amount of money, but since the direct tax support that Morrisville receives, not tuition and fees, direct tax support is $8 million a year, raising another 30-35% of that is not inconsequential. And these funds allow us to do many things with and for students that otherwise wouldn't be possible under state rules. What else do we do? You can see in the strategic plan that, given perhaps my background in econometrics, as an empiricist, I'm evangelical about the need for us to document our effective stewardship of public funds, and we have a full array on the next to last page of metrics associated with each of those areas. One of which is pretty simple. Ask your students, ask your clients, how are you doing? And so SUNY participates in an ACT survey, student opinion survey, and there's 60 or 70 questions, but these are designed for us to examine how do they feel about applied learning. And it turns out our students ranked us number one, not just in the tech sector, but within SUNY, for have you had discussions, have you interacted, have you been able to benefit from a creative technique in learning. And our students say that because of the method of the instruction that we offer. And so we're not only proud of that, but it tends to affirm a piece of research that's now current, that Morrisville learned 100 years ago, and that is that students who have what are called applied learning or impactful learning experiences are known now to have higher retention, higher academic success, higher graduation rates, better job placement, and in fact, a recent study by Purdue University affirms that they have, with that broader, better academic experience in college, they have better lives, both as individuals, both as spouses, parents, and professionals. So it's interesting to see that the more you as a student engage in interaction with other students, with faculty or staff, that impactful interaction leads to a positive outcome for the rest of your life. And so it calls into question, perhaps, how valuable the online experiences that impart information and impart wisdom and technology, how valuable is that experience when viewed in a much broader personal context? So our faculty are very much engaged in the learning enterprise, not as much as you might find in other universities because we don't publish, we don't require publication to the degree that others do, although with our bachelor programs we're now required to hire faculty with doctoral background and training, and they engage in a wide array of applied research, typically trying to affirm demonstration projects for evolving technologies. And I'll get to more of that in a minute. Advisory board representation, all of our programs of study, in order to be current and in order to be relevant, have professionals that come from these companies serving on our advisory boards. So we have over 250 individuals who give up their time at least once a year, usually once a semester, to help interact with students and faculty to review the curriculum, to make certain that the content of each program is relevant in preparing students for a career. And so not only are those individuals reviewing our curriculum, but they are often hiring our graduates or at least the interns in their transition from Morrisville. And it's important for us to have that information because as much as the Academy is trying to affirm student learning outcomes by engaging in learning assessment, sometimes the best overall assessment of if a program is working is do employers indicate that the skill sets students are bringing to the marketplace are sufficient. And that interaction between us and the advisory boards is critically important. So as Morrisville created these baccalaureate programs, it was only natural that the last semester will be a full semester internship. And you can see that 95% of our baccalaureate students complete a full semester internship off campus for pay as they transition from the classroom to the world of work. And so here's just a sampling of some of the internships that students had just last year. And I can't do them all. This is, I think, mostly criminal justice and auto students, because there would be hundreds of these. But you can see that most of these students do their internships and subsequently stay employment in Central New York or in New York State. So students who typically come to us from this region or this state stay, because that's their overall intention. So they're not coming to Morrisville for medical school or law school and then finding employment elsewhere. They're staying in this community. And in that regard, we'd like to think that we represent the next generation of workforce and leaders for our economy. So that's applied learning. Building community is also important. You can see that the comment from Liberty Hyde Bailey spoke to creating farmers, young men and women becoming farmers for their communities. And so you can see that our students engage in a wide array of community service outreach. It's just a few pictures. We have the usual kinds of clubs and organizations, and we have 15 men's and women's NCAA sports, and all of those clubs and athletic teams are required to engage in a community service in some capacity. And we consider that to be an important part of the educational transition from their role as high school graduates into adulthood. Those students on campus become community participants, and they ultimately learn how to become leaders in their community roles as well. In fact, for the several years, last year, the President Obama recognized us for the Community Service Honor Roll. And only a small minority of colleges achieve that distinction, but it's because of the hundreds, thousands of hours of community service that our students engage in that we receive that consideration. A couple of other ways that we enhance community. On campus, this coming January, we're going to have this New York Excelsior Conservation Corps. The about 50, can't quite see it, but 50 students are going to be coming. They're 18 to 25 years old, living on campus, not taking credit courses, but engaging in a wide array of projects that will deal with the Rogers Environmental Center, the Nelson Swamp. They're going to be engaging in many of the same kinds of projects that characterized FDR's CCC back in the 30s. And so the governor has identified this Excelsior Conservation Corps as an opportunity to have young people stay on our campus, interact with our natural resources students, but also use the campus as a stepping off point for a wide array of service projects that will hopefully get them on track to a program of study at Morrisville or elsewhere. Mostly these will be 18 to 25 year old individuals who have not gone to college and probably had some service experience in the armed services. Another way that we improve community, this is an interesting new project for us. We call it On Campus SUNY. We've partnered with a company from England called Cambridge Education Group, and they have about 160 recruiters worldwide. And we're now on their list to try to identify with students and parents if they would like to come to an agriculturally, technically oriented college in upstate rural New York. And it turns out 14 did in January, 40 this fall, and next year we'll probably have about 150 of those students. And these, it turns out, are students that are incredibly gifted in terms of technology and, well, just knowledge. They take organic chemistry, they come with calculus. They've already taken a full array of courses that, frankly, many secondary students in the U.S. do not. They do not always speak English real well, and they are certainly not well accustomed to life in the academic American classroom. So it's an interesting phenomenon. They're overly polite relative to American students. They're shy, they're well behaved, but they don't ask questions. And so that's how they really don't thrive in an American educational setting. And our pathway program is designed to, dare I say it, Americanize them. And so it gets them ready to become more aggressive in their own learning and take ownership. We're working with this company, in fact, to create a post-baccalaureate pathway program, because there are thousands, tens of thousands of students across the globe who already have a bachelor's degree but want to come to the United States for a short, cheap 2-year master's degree, but those students are equally ill-equipped to for the rigors of an American classroom. Yes, knowledge-wise, they're smart enough, but in terms of cultural acculturation, they are not ready for the interaction between themselves and the faculty member. One of the greatest, it turns out, one of the greatest assets of the American university is that students feel comfortable asking questions, faculty demand that participation, and simply don't stand up as a sage on a stage. That kind of difference creates the innovation and the entrepreneurial thinking that is invested in so many of our students. It's a cultural phenomenon that reflects the university and the academy, reflects that aspect of American life as much as any other. And others in the globe want, they know about it and they want to be able to benefit from it. So there's a lot of partnerships that are yet out here for us. Certainly, in building community, we go from the campus to the larger region, and Startup New York is one of the areas Morrisville is hoping to expand. We have currently, officially announced by the governor, 2 startups. There's Empire Brewing is building a new facility in Cazenovia. Dave Katleski actually has consented to design a new inaugural brew for my inauguration in a few weeks. We're calling it the 1908 Ale. It consists of all locally grown ingredients, including legacy hops that survived not just the blight in Madison County 100 years ago, but also Prohibition. But we found a recipe in the historical archives that is 100 years old, and we're going to use those original ingredients. And so it's a beer that may have tasted very much like what Morrisville students drank a little over 100 years ago. There's a K-16 corporation that deals with educational technology innovation, not only hardware and software, tools that are going to be used in the classroom, clickers, trackers, mobile devices, and so there's a burgeoning market for that. And we have an IT program that students will interact with. So more on Startup New York, I suspect, later. Build a sustainable future. Perhaps as much as any other major theme, Morrisville has been, probably going back to Liberty Hyde's writing, has been very conscious of the earth, very conscious of conservation, and compared to many other colleges, as a result, is on the cutting edge of building a sustainable future. And that not only means trying to keep ourselves open as a business, but making certain that we minimize our carbon footprint in doing so. Just some of our 2020 initiatives that we've received grants for: a biodigester, which started off to be about a 1-megawatt-sized facility. It's probably going to be now about a 0.5 megawatt. We already have a biodigester on campus that's a plug flow variety, and it's aptly named because it gets plugged up periodically. So the new system will be hydraulic, and it will be in constant flow, so we don't anticipate those problems. But that's an important example of what Morrisville does, because we test developing technologies and we become demonstration projects for the efficacy and the viability, and we do testing and research to see if this stuff works. The new biodigester will adopt a much larger and developing technology, and in fact, when it's in place, should save us around $250,000 a year in utility costs. And it isn't just the biomass from our dairy farm, but we're going to be partnering with other institutions for food waste. And if they're in a reasonably small area, we can truck it in and not lose the economies affiliated with the biodigester. Alternative fuels building, you might have seen the governor's capital for a day. We received a $13 million grant to build a new facility that marries diesel technology and renewable energy. That particular program deals with microhydro, solar, wind, and geothermal. And we have students graduating from that program who understand not only how to size the installations, but also choose the appropriate method for green energy. We have a grant, believe it or not, for Brewing Institute. And if you come out to Morrisville on Route 20, we'll soon have an addition off our Copper Turret restaurant. And we can probably have a sample of the 1908 ale. And we are also part of this Labs to Jobs program with 4 other SUNY colleges, but that mostly is our extensions, our partnership and affiliation with the EOC Center, with Tim Penix, who's our vice president at the EOC. Again, it fits with the idea of having labs, experiential learning that finally creates career pathways. How do we connect to the CNY Rising? I thought about this a lot, and we essentially will provide workforce readiness for many of the specialty areas that are being talked about in that document. We have a BTEC and BBA degrees. Those are bachelor's degrees, and most of you probably aren't aware of the difference between those degrees as types versus a BA or a BS. It's simple. A BA requires 90 liberal arts credits out of 120. A BS requires 60. These require 30 credits in liberal arts science. That may mean that we compromise some understanding of the broader world around us, but it means we have 30 to 60 more credits to have discipline-specific instruction, and it allows for the internships in the final semester. So that creates a degree type that allows us to accommodate an entirely different kind of orientation to education. And so it allows for those capstone experiences, those internships that you saw. Down the road, I'm hoping to offer not an MBA, because Lord knows they're ubiquitous, but an MAB, a master's in ag business, a master's in agricultural business, because we need growing numbers of professionals who are endowed with the insights and the abilities of a business professional, but specifically toward the agricultural arena. Whether it's enhancing production through precision farming that uses GPS and GIS techniques, or it's processing, packaging, distribution, logistics, security, there's a full array of agricultural changes that need to be made in the U.S. and especially in this region if we're going to ship products effectively down to the metro areas of New York or more globally. Whoops, technology transfer. We have the Renewable Energy Training Center, and I talked a little bit about Nelson Farms. We have these institutes that not only allow students to stretch their muscles and apply their learned concepts from the classroom in an applied way, but they do so in concert with members of the broader community. And one of my final stories is about this applied research, this CEA project. In the CNY Rising document, in the agricultural section, we identify some new methods of production and distribution, not the least of which is controlled environmental agriculture and or high tunnel production. So controlled environmental agriculture, we have a prototype on our campus, and it involved many of the different programs of study to get it built and to maintain it. So what is it? It's basically a piece of plastic with some wood framing. It's a cheap greenhouse with, yes, some duct tape. The residential construction students helped to design it and build it. The horticulture students actually run it. And what do? Along with the aquaculture students, we have tilapia that we raise in these tanks. And the tilapia get fed and they produce waste. The waste becomes nutrients for the hydroponics and aquaponics production in this facility. So we grow vegetables, tomatoes, cucumbers. We grow all kinds of green things in this setting. And so we have to monitor carefully how much nutrient waste from the fish go into the water and how much we might need. We have to monitor the ambient temperature, the air quality, in significant ways through sensors that have to be monitored. The renewable energy students helped to design the heat systems for this particular facility. And since we have wood backup, the renewable energy students who maintain forests on campus actually cut some of them down, turned them into pellets. In fact, on campus for a while, we had the only, to my knowledge, the only dorm in the country that was fueled by wood pellets to produce not only heat but electricity as well. And so what else goes on? When they pick this stuff, it's sold in the Copper's Turret, our student-run restaurant. The culinary students actually will design different dishes using these harvested products. The ag business students create they take these products to the farmer's market where they sell them, so they learn about sales, they advertise the college. The IT students have created a website to sell them on campus, and I'm forgetting some others about how this works. Oh, in fact, the students in ag business created their own LLC. They created their own company called Morrisville Fresh, so they learned about how to do that. They learned how to sell and market something that they make on campus. What better preparation could there be for students to assume a role as either a supervisor or an entrepreneur in their own right? So those are the kind of things that we do. And yes, as Christy has already shared with you, the econometrician in me and the empiricist in me really bemoans these kinds of studies where people try to rank colleges. But now as a president, I'm really happy to share that U.S. News & World Report is becoming my best friend. It turns out Morrisville for many years wasn't on any of these rankings. So when I first became provost, I was in a position to ask, why not? And it turns out I discovered why not. It's because we weren't filling out the forms. So then when we started filling out the forms, we realized they were asking for some information that we didn't quite have, so we went about getting it. And each time, So now we're not on the list, but we're 33rd in terms of the region. And if you look at most of the colleges that are ahead of us for the region, they're private. So we're the 12th best regional public college, and we're moving up fast. But I'm especially proud of what Christy highlighted before. For students that come to us, they're not the richest. They're not always the best academically prepared. They're excited about what they do, whether they are the sort of nerds in IT or the gearheads in auto and diesel tech. Yeah, we refer to them affectionately as those individuals. They're passionate about some particular area of interest. Maybe their secondary experience didn't fit them well. Maybe the kinds of lectures and the kinds of classroom experiences that they had didn't fit them well, but they find their people here at Morrisville, and they not just among themselves, but among the faculty as well. So, and just this past June, we were the highest ranked public institution across the country for the use of internships at the baccalaureate level, and that's because essentially all of our programs require that. So again, what's new at Morrisville is old. It's a brand new beginning because we're going to start telling our story to whoever will listen. And we hope that people listen because we know what? We know that our success implies a mode of education, a mode of delivery that is successful. If the United States is truly interested in becoming competitive and increasing the number of students who receive associate and bachelor's degrees, we're going to gain traction not by serving the valedictorians and salutatorians everywhere. They do well. We know that. We're going to have to reach out to students who were B and C students in high school and maybe can find a more experiential and a more motivating form of education. That's how we're going to transform the American workforce to become more productive and to be more valuable in an internationally competitive marketplace. So for those individuals in the Obama administration or the next administration or the Lumina Foundation that seeks to address these issues, I think they would do well to take a closer look at those colleges who, by objective evidence, are doing a very good job of educating students who otherwise might not fit in other settings. So our strategic plan is called A College That Works and A System That Excels. It's one of our first efforts not only to share a planning document that highlights our efforts, but to give you a sense of the kind of different educational experience that Morrisville offers. Not every college in the SUNY system is just like us. In fact, the university centers are quite a bit different, and the community colleges have a distinctly different mission. But for those colleges who work in the technology sector, that's the kind of educational outreach that we offer to not only our students, but to our citizens. So with that, I hope I gave you a sense of what is old is new at Morrisville, and we are definitely we're definitely open for business. So thanks.
Thank you. All right, I see some questions. I also see someone sitting at a different table than he normally sits at. And so I wanted to tell you how much I appreciate that. And if I had one wish, if it were my birthday, it would be that everyone would move around. John.
And I'm that individual.
I'm sorry, you're going to have to stand at the podium as we discussed. Thanks.
I'm that individual. 40 to 50 years ago, you started something new in Syracuse, as we did here with the Thursday Morning Roundtable. But most of us don't know too much about it. Tell us about what happens on New Street in Syracuse.
I know it's his business, but
he's the boss.
You mean the EOC Center?
Yes.
Oh, well.
It's a Morrisville operation, isn't it?
Well, yes and no. Yes, to the extent that we have an affiliation and a memorandum of understanding between Morrisville State College and the EOC. Yes, to the extent that all the individuals who work at the EOC are state employees and they're on Morrisville's payroll. So we become the agent, the conduit of all business practice, business processing, human resources, expenditures. So all... In the normal way, you might think of EOC having being an extension of an academic department or an institute at Morrisville. That's true. However, and I should have Tim explain a little more about this, it being an operation that also reports directly to a different SUNY agency, the UCAWD, receives separate SUNY funding in a manner different from Morrisville State College and resides 35 miles away and charges no tuition and offers services to students who may or may not be ready for Morrisville, it's decidedly different. And so it offers an opportunity for students to who aren't quite ready for higher education or maybe want to re-enter the workforce. It offers a wide array of very valuable short-term vocational and career-focused programs of study. But yes, it's part of Morrisville, but in some respects, it's geographically and in terms of its unique mission elements, a world apart. Some students from EOC come ultimately to Morrisville. Those who go to post-secondary education mostly go to OCC. But the vast majority of those graduates are essentially trying to find a way to secure a position in the local Syracuse or Onondaga County economy. They don't usually migrate out to Madison County, at least not initially. So it's I'll be completely candid. I think Morrisville ended up. How did Morrisville end up with this affiliation? I think OCC and the county. You have to pay benefits to those people who are on the payroll, and I think OCC and the county recognized a close kinship. And Tim serves on the board of the Onondaga County Community College trustees, and in a wide variety of other settings. So it's a critically important piece of economic development for this region, but it's filtered through Morrisville, if you will, for reasons that I think are as much economic as any other. Yeah.
Thank you. But John makes a good point, and we should get Tim on the schedule to come back and talk about Syracuse EOC. We certainly involved EOC a lot. EOC was involved in the Onondaga Citizens League Skills Gap study, where we talked about a lot of those issues more locally. So thanks for bringing it up.
Tim loves to talk more than I do.
Could you talk a little bit about the admission and enrollment trends over the last 5 years at Morrisville? And then more specifically, I think a lot of the state universities now are looking more at out-of-state enrollment and tuition, because of tuition, in the future. Could you comment about that?
I don't have the chart, but if I did, you'd see that the enrollment of freshmen at Morrisville in the past 5 years has dropped precipitously, more than 30%, and that's scary. I think in part it's because we weren't telling our story systematically. We weren't engaging in the kinds of marketing and communication outreach that are characteristic of other institutions. We did absolutely no direct marketing to students. So I'm now working, since my background is econometrics, I'm working with an analysis to identify how our students and their attributes correlate with fresh high school seniors and juniors, and we're identifying those individuals in our catchment areas and in non-traditional areas to identify like-minded students. They might be enrolled in FFA, 4-H. They might be affiliated with some kind of vocational group in high school. We're reaching out to those students. It's not hard through social media now to identify students, not just in terms of their academic performance, but their overall preferences and interests. And so those are the students that are reaching out for the first time in a direct marketing campaign. It does cost money, but we have hundreds more students already in our inquiry pool this year than we did last year. And in the next year, we expect even more. So we're going after traditional kinds of students, traditional age students, but in a more systematic way. But the other part of your question does speak to many of those students we're seeking are out of state, because it turns out of state students pay New York tuition that is still less than what they would pay in Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, or New Hampshire at a state-funded institution. So in that sense, we're very competitive, even charging out-of-state tuition prices. And as you can see through our on-campus SUNY, yes, we are looking to have more students internationally consider Morrisville, especially if they're interested in the kinds of unique programs we offer or the way we teach them. And this partnership with Cambridge Education Group, we're confident will yield ultimately a couple of hundred students a year. That not only provides a fiscal base for Morrisville to move forward, but it also internationalizes our student body, and the interaction between those students and Morrisville students has helped us all. They do smoke too much, though. And we're going to be a smoke-free campus come this fall.
Good morning. My name is Matt Marco. I'm a vice chair of the SUNY ESF Board of Trustees. A couple of presidents ago at both colleges, we had some strong alliances between Morrisville and ESF. Can you speak to how that may be heading under your leadership and President Wheeler's?
Yes. I know there was a very strong, close personal connection between Ray Cross and Neil Murphy. And I came to know Neil somewhat since my time at Morrisville. In fact, we're having a reception in a couple of weeks at the Everson as part of the inauguration kickoff, and Neil's agreed to serve as a host of that event. So I've had a few interactions with the new president, and actually he's the one who turned me on to this book that was written by Liberty Hyde Bailey, The Holy Earth. So Quentin, I think, is a someone that I can have already developed a bit of a personal relationship. But it's clear that if I had to pick a college in the SUNY system where there's probably more complementary partnerships, not just because of the overlap of the themes and the projects, but there's a comparative advantage where ESF is clearly an internationally known research unit, and our faculty are much more interested in translating research into curriculum and preparing the workforce. So there's a wonderful complementary relationship that should exist, that does exist, but it should be expanded. And so there's no closer partner than ESF geographically, and I think there's no more likely partner for a number of these initiatives that we, certainly in the realm of sustainable and renewable energy and environmental concerns. There's no question. So this is a little bit of a commercial for ESF. If you are unaware of the international stature that ESF at SUNY institution has throughout the U.S. and the globe, you should be incredibly proud because it is the best institution in terms of research and education in that realm. It's a very specialized area, but there's no better campus, there's no better college anywhere in the globe in terms of addressing environmental issues broadly defined. So thanks.
You mentioned the Startup New York projects, and I think that in this region, Startup New York has been slow to start up. So could you just elaborate on those a little bit?
Sure. So let's see. The good news is that Morrisville leads the way. The bad news is we lead the way with two. So let me state that as the president of the college, I look forward to many more partnerships because certainly the kind of education that I've offered lends itself to an outreach by either existing, expanding, or invading firms, firms that are coming in from the outside. We have a wide array of programs, as you see, where companies might find it interesting to align with Morrisville, and that's part of the SUNY startup, or the Startup New York requirement that ultimately there be a close academic connection between whatever the company might be and some academic program on campus. And so given the breadth of programs we have, I anticipate many more companies. It's no secret that we have a backlog, frankly, of companies that have expressed an interest in partnering with us, but the process of getting through the approval is not inconsequential. And that's as it should be, because we're talking about ultimately payment in lieu of tax programs, income tax benefits that are going to accrue to these individuals and their companies in significant ways. If the taxpayers are going to offer these significant incentives, then there should be no stone should be left unturned to verify that this is likely a viable business, that it's going to be a sustainable business, and that the partnership between the college and that business is not a fly-by-night kind of, I mean, because so many other kinds of economic development programs have often had too many loopholes, and companies that secured huge benefits were often just shirt changers in terms of changing their names. And so I think it makes sense that we make certain that this initiative have the attendant oversight and procedures. It has led to a long and involved process. I can tell you, without naming any corporate names, that we have companies in the energy field that are interested in partnering with us. We have a particularly interesting company who has managed to, through genetic engineering, produces salmon in freshwater pools. And our aquaculture program is particularly interested in that, and I'm confident that Wegmans would take as much salmon as could ever be produced. I mean, this region has an abundance of talent, but also an abundance of land. And if we can find ways to use that land around the year, extend the growing season, even to year-round use, as I described in our controlled environmental agriculture, then more food will be produced in this region, and we can become an agent of social change. I think in my ag work group I learned that in the next 40 years, the world will have to produce as much food as it has up to this point in history. So we have a challenge.
Thanks, Andrew. Hey, by the way, you see I'm sitting at a different table, too.
I'm very proud of you.
It's only because mine is full. Yeah. I also heard Naomi Klein this week at Hendricks Chapel, and it was a remarkable talk, and she's a remarkable person. And so I'm thinking about the environment a lot, and you've got me thinking about farms. And my question, I guess, as pertains to your expertise and the sustainability goal, could you talk for a little about the role that farms play in climate change or in the CO2 problem, the gases? And also, I mean, is that a major player? And in terms of your goals, do you see or does the college have in mind a goal of sustainability in a sense of actually not increasing the carbon footprint of the earth? I mean, is that a possibility, and are you getting there, and what strategies are you pursuing?
Yes, it absolutely can get there. The kinds of technological advances that have been made in recent years regarding energy production are significant. And in fact, that's exactly why we started a renewable energy, a bachelor's degree in renewable energy, dealing with microhydro, wind, solar, and geothermal, all of which are very viable technologies that can be implemented on a farm. And so it isn't just about minimizing the burning of plastic. It isn't just about trying to minimize through efficient planting and harvesting, minimize the diesel fuels that are emitted. It's about trying to modify the way in which farms work. We don't want to have dairy farms close. We want them to expand, but we want to recycle the biomass, which is considerable, and the industrial waste, the restaurant food waste that many areas, institutional cafeterias, the prisons in Marcy and up north in Watertown. They produce a tremendous amount of food waste. If that could be shipped and added to the local biomass waste from Morrisville's dairy farm and other farms, then we can recapture that energy. And it's never going to diminish completely globally because, frankly, the amount of carbon emissions from other countries will swamp us. But we have the technology to dramatically reduce the emissions in cars, the emissions on the farm, and we can recapture through those energy sources. So on our campus, we have two windmills, where we will soon have two biodigesters. We have natural gas vehicles. And so we know that John Deere hires more IT students, hundreds of IT students every year, because they're trying to deal with much more precision planting and harvesting. In fact, using GPS and GIS sensors, you don't even need a farmer driving the tractor anymore. I think they do it just to get out of the house, frankly. But farms often have streams, and the streams, even with a microhydro application, can capture year-round, often, much of the energy that is just lost as the water goes across the property. So we're also trying to find ways that some of our ag business students take courses in aquaculture, because they have land where these ponds could be expanded and they can grow fish. And then again, the fish produce waste and so on. So if we start to think of the different pieces of a vertically integrated agricultural ecosystem, we often as a society haven't focused on how one segment relates to the next. But if we take a much broader view of how things are planted and harvested and processed and packaged and distributed, then if we examine those steps in between that often were just handoffs, then we can identify areas of overlap where we can truly save significant amounts of energy. So the technology continues to expand. And Morrisville doesn't always do sort of the cutting edge basic research, but we find ways to have those research findings that have merit to be tested and to be incorporated into our curriculum. So, I mean, for every PhD who's out there doing research in some specialized area of knowledge in agriculture, there's at least 20 or 50 Morrisville students that need to know how to do something to adopt it. So we aren't sure yet. Hopefully we have not yet discovered the very best kinds of energy savings or energy recapture technologies, but when they are produced, Morrisville's going to be there to check it out, and our students, because we do that now. Thanks for the question.
Congratulations on your appointment. I'm Pam Brunet with Leadership Greater Syracuse and a proud alumni of the journalism program. My question for you is to commend you on goal number 3, and I'm curious what brought that about, and could it be come from the fact that many of your kids come from metropolitan areas and now put in a beautifully rural environment? And yeah, goal number 3 is to enhance cultural competency and promote equity and inclusion.
Yes. Well, we had a lot of debate about whether that should be part of building community or part of the learning. So the first theme, dealing with applied learning, basically outlines in broad terms what we expect students to be able to leave with. And what we expect them to be able to leave with is an understanding of liberal arts, an understanding of a particularly technologically specialized area. But it's becoming increasingly clear to us, not just on campus but across the globe, that if students don't have an appreciation for diverse cultures in this state or across the globe, if they can't appreciate and celebrate the differences that exist, then they will not thrive in a global enterprise. And so we included it as a specific area on the learning side of the house because in addition to I'm going to sound a little bit like an academic. In addition to the program learning outcomes that faculty have to identify for every academic program and that we will measure student success, we're now going to incorporate learning outcomes of cultural competencies because each program, as it prepares a student for a career, is going to be hindering them if they leave with a very myopic view of how the world works. And we do have students that come from very small towns in rural upstate and downstate New York, along with very savvy, I would say, very metro savvy students. But it turns out what the rural students are used to and being comfortable with, it's just different than what the Metro students. I can't verify this, but I was told by a dean that a week into the semester, a student from New York City asked where the subway stop was to get to Syracuse. So think about it. Anyone who is successful at navigating their culture and their neighborhood that is suddenly very different is going to be at a disadvantage unless they learn how to appreciate a different setting. And so that's the challenge that we have, but we didn't want to hide it as some subcategory, so we made it the third goal in the 3 related to applied learning. And so we will be hiring. I've just reconstituted the Diversity Equity Task Force on campus, and we will be hiring a chief diversity officer that will report directly to me and work with the deans and the faculty directly at rolling out that particular initiative. Our campus, with its high level of diversity, becomes a wonderful learning laboratory itself for the interaction of students from different walks of life. And so when we have a dance, we never quite know whether it's going to be Puff Daddy or who was it just broke up? Blake Shelton. So, yeah. So I don't even ask anymore if they're interested in the Beatles or Bruce Springsteen. So, one time the dean of students reported to me that the dance got a little bit animated. You know, so and they said it would be really great if you would just kind of show up and pretend to moonwalk. Then it would calm things down. So, it's a wonderful place for students from a wide variety of walks of life to. We do not have the richest students on campus. There's a few equine students who actually come from kind of established homes where they're not allowed to bring their horses, by the way. We don't allow that. It's not other programs of study that you find in more elite institutions. I won't name any, but we don't allow students to bring their horses because we expect them to learn how to break and train and yes, Breed, others. So they're becoming professionals for the equine business, not as some kind of hobbyist. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but our program prepares professionals. But cultural competencies is an incredibly important topic, so thanks for asking about it. And I can tell how insightful our graduates are with their questions. Thanks.
Thank you, David Rogers, Mooresville State College.
Thanks.